Jesse asked about doing that song and if it was appropriate. And you and I have got people all around us that this time of year, they struggle with it. They've had losses or hurt or things, and they feel like they've got to be kind of quiet. And I want to encourage you, there may be some people around you that a call or a text message or a letter or a note, maybe inviting them to be a part of your holiday or something we're doing here could mean the world to them. Some of you know John and Jean Hall. They used to sit right there. And then a couple years ago, they started sitting out in the lobby. Well, John passed away this past week. It was a surprise. He had been ill, but they weren't expecting this to happen so quickly. And so we're having a memorial for him tomorrow here at 10 o'clock for any of you can come. And Jean, when we were putting together the memorial, the passage she said she just meant the world to her is from Philippians. It says, it's God's peace that transcends our understanding. And she gets it. And so we're spending this series looking at this idea of peace. The two words in the Bible, one is a Hebrew word, shalom. You've heard that a good bit, I'm sure. Another, a Greek word, eirene. The idea of peace, the definition of it, it includes prosperity, tranquility, quiet, security, or harmony. And it's something that you and I are created for. We long for it, but we don't find it very often. And sometimes the way we find it is in ways that are very, very temporary at best. Before we get into the topic, I want to set the stage for it today. This idea of peace at any price, some of us, we're used to the phrase, keep the peace, which mainly means to suck it up just to get along with others. God's called us to something very different than that, and this idea of how to have relationships, friendships, whether it's work or at home or in your neighborhood, wherever it is, there are some ingredients to it that are really important that you and I bring to the table. I want to read to you, this is in Romans 12, and it's got all kind of things about a recipe for creating peace or building good relationships. And it starts off negative. It's going to actually bookend this with kind of the really, really tough relationships. It says here, bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God would bless them. Can you imagine what would happen if we took this seriously? Right now we live in a culture that says, if someone irritates me, I have every right to curse them and to broadcast this everywhere I can. I'm definitely not going to pray that God would bless them because of the way they've treated me. Bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God will bless them. Be happy with those who are happy. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with each other. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of ordinary people. And by the way, you are ordinary people. And don't think you know it all. Never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in such a way that everybody can see that everyone will see you're honorable. And then this verse, we're going to come back to this in a minute. Do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. And then it comes back to where we started off about those who persecute or those that are hard for us. It says, dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. For the scriptures say, I will take revenge. I'll pay them back, says the Lord. Instead, if your enemy is hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals of shame on their heads. I want to explain this just a minute, but part of it saying that when it comes to exacting revenge, you and I are fallible in it, so you need to leave that to God. That's His job. Our job is to be, as much as possible, people of peace. And some people have taken this last part. It says, to feed your enemy, or if they're thirsty, give them something to drink. It says, in doing this, you'll heap burning coals of shame on their heads. And some people say, finally, I have a way to get at them. And some of you know what it's like. You've done the nice thing because you know now you've got them hooked, and they're wondering when the next shoe's going to drop. That's not what this means. This is this heaping burning coals of shame. In the Middle East, there were in some villages and towns a public way of demonstrating that you're repentant of having treated others wrongly was to actually take a bowl with hot coals in it, putting on your head, and walk through town. It was just a way of demonstrating penance. So the idea here is that if you and I do what God's asked us to do, and especially as you'll see this morning about relating to others, maybe in ways they don't deserve, trying to find peace and to demonstrate love in a way that is completely undeserved, that the shame, the heaping coals of shame and all that, really what will happen is in many cases, they'll see your good behavior and it'll shame them for the way they're treating it. Some of us, we get in these arguments and stuff, and you get, both of you are wrong. But when you decide not to fight back, all of a sudden, there's just that one person yelling and screaming and cussing and arguing. And in many cases, they end up feeling ashamed of the way they've operated because you're not giving them any fuel. That's the point of this. So anyway, I want to go back to this verse 18. I'm going to use a different translation. This is the New International Version. It says this: if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. I'm going to read it one more time. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. You and I, those of us that are followers, are called by God to pursue peace with everyone and in every way we can. There is no wiggle room out of this. This time of year, it gets real sticky because we're going to be in circumstances and situations we're going to have all kind of contact with people. And in some cases, it looks great. In other cases, it is utterly miserable. The prevailing norm in our culture is I'll pursue peace with people that I like and people that I think treat me right. And if they'll go, it's 50-50. If they go part way, I'll go part way. If they don't, I'm out of here. And what God has called you and me to is something radically different. Jesus' example was, he had the song a minute ago. He's the Prince of Peace. He came to bring peace on earth. And we need to adopt his mindset. He went after his enemies. He went after those that didn't care anything about him. He demonstrated this love, and he demonstrated this kind of concern for others that was even at his own expense. Whether it was his own family members that at times thought he was crazy, his opponents, those that feigned friendship, they weren't really friends, those that were close. I mean, he treated people. He wanted to pursue this peace with and for them. But there's a caveat to this that's really important. So we're called to pursue peace with everyone, but we need to do this without sacrificing truth and love from God's perspective. So I need to be a peacemaker. I need to go after, in all these relationships, we'll look at some categories here in a minute. I need to pursue peace and harmony as much as I possibly can. But I need to do it without sacrificing truth and love. Jesus is the epitome of this, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to explain to you in just a moment the other side of it. Matthew 10:34. Jesus said this, that the Prince of Peace, the one that tells us to pursue peace, he goes, "Don't imagine that I came to bring peace to the earth. I came not to bring peace, but a sword." Now, some people have taken this and said, see, the Bible is just really squirrely. Can't make up his mind. Jesus, he says one thing, and he says something else, and, you know, he's constantly, you can't trust it. The problem is, many times we take things out of their context, and we don't look at what the whole story is. And he's very clear here. He is not a proponent of peace at any price, when that price is expressing truth and love from God's perspective. It's not a contradiction. It's a strong clarification. So I'm going to see, some of you have heard this before. Don't raise your hand, but some of you have heard of Meatloaf. Not that Meatloaf, but the singer Meatloaf. Really hard to watch sometimes, especially the older videos. But anyway, so Meatloaf had a song. And the lyrics said this: "I'd do anything for love, but..." What's the last part? Yes, see, some of you have heard Meatloaf. You just didn't want to admit it. "I'll do anything for love. Oh, but I won't do that." There are limits, because it ends up conflicting with values. And Jesus is saying here, we need to go after peace. That's our role, but never at the expense of truth and love from God's perspective. where truth and love are gone, you don't really have peace. You may be kind of getting along on the surface, but that's not real peace. It's fake, it's pretend, it's ignoring reality. And in Jesus' life, we see a great example of this. He's the Prince of Peace. He came to bring peace on earth. But in a lot of places where he went, there was a lot of conflict. The religious elite at the time had twisted God's word, and Jesus would point that out to them, and they hated it. He would show up at the temple, and he would come to worship, and he would see that they had turned it into a marketing machine where they were selling. At that point, they would sacrifice, you know, doves and goats and lambs and all that, and they were selling it these ridiculous prices because they could, so they could pad their own wallets. And Jesus pointed that out. He was very clear to speak the truth in love, and many times it disrupted what had been kind of go along to get along. And he disrupted the peace significantly. Extra credit sometime you ought to read in the New Testament letter of Galatians chapter 2, verse 11. Circumstance that happened here was, so he had a couple of key players in the early church. Peter was one of them. Paul was another. Peter had been traveling around. He was well known. And there was a group of formerly Jewish folks that had become Christians, but they didn't like the fact that there were some non-Jewish people that had become Christians, and they treated them as second-class citizens. And in this circumstance, Peter had been wanting to keep in favor with these Jewish ones that were arrogant about their faith, and so he ignored the Gentile Christians, treated them as second-class so he could stay here and have their influence and power and all that. And when Paul saw this, saw it happening publicly, he corrected Peter publicly, and it was a big row. There are times when you pursue peace as long as it's possible, but there are some times when you need to speak the truth, you need to stand up for what's right, and the peace that seemed to be going on is utterly disrupted. So what I'd like to do is, I'd like to take the rest of the message today, and I want to talk about this on a more practical level for you and me. In relationships that we have, how we relate to people around us, whether it's at work, at home, in our neighborhoods, could be in groups that we're a part of, it could be at school. I mean, there's all kind of realms you and I are in, and there's a tendency, if we're not careful, to have fake kind of peace just to kind of get along. And sometimes it's at very high cost. When we leave today, there's a take-home sheet you can get outside each of the doors. It's got a guide to kind of walk through how to work through this personally. But I want to we're going to look at two things. The first is the reasons for people that they opt for fake or faux peace with others. Like, why would they give in to fake kind of peace just to kind of get along with other people? And the big reason is they just want to avoid the repercussions that come. So I want you to think about it for a minute. Your relationships you're in could be work, could be home, could be in-laws, outlaws, all those kind of relationships. Why is it sometimes, what is it you're trying to avoid by just keeping the peace even though you know there are things that are wrong? What's the problem when you bring up things that disrupt the peace? What's going to happen to you? Throw me some things out. Oh yeah, you're a target. Especially with family. Sometimes at work, depending on how long you've been there, but with family. In family systems, if I bring up something that, you know, where I need to speak the truth in love around me, what's going to happen is everyone in the family's got a backpack full of ammo they can use against me. You go to one family member and say, you know, boy, when you said that, I think you're really out of line. Talk about out of line. Remember June 13th of 78? And they just keep pulling stuff out because they know stuff on you. We've got stuff on each other. And so the repercussion is, if I point it out, man, I've just got this big bullseye on me. What else happens? What are some other repercussions? What are people trying to avoid, and so they allow this fake peace to take place? Okay, conflict, yeah. I mean, who wants it? Well, actually, some people thrive on it. But a lot of times, it's just, I don't want to go through that. Let's just keep it quiet. What else? Okay, not getting what you want. You know, there are people that have been cut out of wills because they just disrupted the so-called peace in the family unit. How about at work? What happens at work if you don't just go along to get along? What could happen there? Yeah, you get labeled. And that means promotions are, or you may be out the door. Some of y'all have heard of, the term whistleblower is kind of common. It got really thrust in the spotlight several years ago with a guy named Jeffrey Wigand. If you saw the movie, Russell Crowe movie, The Insider, it was Wigand's story. He was a top exec in the tobacco industry. And he came public with some things that caused huge turmoil. It disrupted the so-called peace in the whole industry he was in. And it led to a litigated settlement in court where the tobacco industry admitted that they had been lying about knowledge about the impact of what their product was doing, and it cost them $246 billion in the settlement. Wigand is the one that was labeled a whistleblower, and he, to this day, he hates that term. He goes, whistleblower, it sounds like I'm a tattletale. He goes, I'm not. This is what he said. This is his words. He goes, I wasn't disloyal. I told the truth. People were dying. He said, I was loyal, but I was loyal to a higher order of ethical responsibility. He really disrupted the inner circle of peace in the industry. And he was a head of research and development for Brown and Williamson. And because he came out with telling the truth, because he was concerned about what was happening and the impact it was having on others, it cost him dearly. Not only was he labeled a traitor, not only did he lose his job, but his reputation was gone. It created all kind of stress in his family, ended up being divorced and estranged from his kids for quite a while. He had to hire bodyguards because there were death threats against him because he came out and told the truth. He's now landed a job making one-tenth of what he was. He's now a teacher. There was a high price paid because he wouldn't keep the peace and he was willing to take the repercussions. Some of us are in systems and we're in units. Some of you, the reason you're not going somewhere this holiday is because you've been there before. And you've already decided, I'm going to have the flu. Some of you don't want people to come see you, and so you've decided to remodel your kitchen for the 8th time in 6 years. I mean, there are things that happen, and you know how it works. You know it at work. You know it at home. Some of your neighborhoods, there are all these issues that go on because if I'm going to keep the peace, I've got to shut up. I'm not going to say anything. And it's not real peace. It's absent of conflict, maybe, yes. But it's not real peace, and it's definitely not healthy. It's dangerous. It's ugly. It's horrible. But it happens because I don't want the repercussions of that. So some of you know that, and the take-home sheet will help kind of guide through if you're willing to do something different, something that would be really honoring to God and maybe make a difference, then it'll guide you through that. But I want to look at one more. We looked at the whole idea of reasons people opt for fake peace with others. But there are reasons that people opt for fake peace with you and me. Because I'm going to tell you that some of us are the ones that create the environment where people want to steer clear of us. Because we're the offenders. And they're doing it, quite honestly, because they want to avoid either our fragility or our fury. Now, it's easy to look at others and say, boy, that person's hard to live with. Or that person's this, or that boss is this, that neighbor's this. You and I are those people. And I want us to spend just a few minutes thinking about this. And it's going to take a lot of courage and humility. But there are people around you that are afraid to tell you the truth. And it seems like everything's okay, but if you could read their thought bubble, have a seat. Because they're afraid of the fallout, they're afraid of the impact, they've seen it before, they don't want to have anything to do with it. There are people that are making excuses not to be around you or just to tell you what you want to hear. There are families all around and offices where people just dance around people. They're afraid to step on eggshells or landmines. And this happens all around, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just, this is a time for you and I to look in the mirror. There are environments that you and I play into where people see that we're not respectful or we're unkind or we're cold or unforgiving, we're prejudiced, we're racist in the way we say things or the things we endorse. We're demanding, judgmental. We have toxic behaviors of all kinds. We're mean. We're codependent. You need to name it. You and I are the offenders here. And we need to take a hard look in the mirror to see, so what is it like being around me? Some people may have tried to address it with us, and they've given up. Let's go back to the two tactics. There are two kind of extremes in this. That's either the people that are really fragile or the people that are furious. The fragile people are the ones where you try to talk to them and immediately say, oh, I'm the worst person in the world. I'm such a worm. I always mess up. Oh, I shouldn't even live. And someone's thinking, I don't ever want to bring that up to you again. And the fragile people, they do this. They respond this way. This is, you and I do this at times because we're trying to get someone to back off. We want them to feel sorry for us so they'll never do that again. And so there's not any strength there. There's not a willingness to address anything. It's just, I'm just very fragile. And, oh, how dare you talk? Don't you know you're hurting me when you say that? I'm going to tell you, that's extremely unattractive, by the way. So if your default is to that, I would encourage you to figure out a way to get rid of it. But the furious people are no more attractive. You're a furious person when someone comes to point out something to you. They want there to be peace in the relationship, but it can't be devoid of dealing with the facts. And there's some things about you that are offensive or things that may be blind spots that you have. And the moment they point it out, you immediately get angry. And you do. You pull out of your backpack ammo to go after them. And you just turn on them because, how dare you bring up anything to me when I know this about, and you just point out all that kind of stuff. Again, uniquely unhelpful. And sometimes the fury just shows up as just being cold. Distant, just write them off, have nothing to do with them again. Some of you know what it's like. You get around people. You've seen it in the office where someone now, it's so cold, it's like you walk into a freezer. I worked in a place like this a while back and there was someone you knew, you don't get anywhere near, I just call Edna. If you're named Edna, it's not you. But no one would go around Edna because she was a force to be reckoned with. Some of you are Ednas. Some of us are. So how do we deal with this? What do I do? How do I know if I'm that kind of person? And what am I going to do with it? And the solution is fairly simple. The application of it takes some guts. It takes courage and humility. The remedy is for each of us to decide that I am going to, from this point forward, I'm going to speak the truth in love, and I'm going to invite others to do that to me. I'm going to do my best to be open and real about this with others, and I'm going to ask them to turn around and do the same thing. Can you imagine if your boss, let's say you're a boss, and you went up to everyone on your team and said, look, there are probably some areas where I could improve. Probably is maybe an understatement. But if you have something you'd like to point out, make an appointment and let's talk about it. Can you imagine working in an office where a supervisor or a boss said that and actually were willing to do it without your raise being on the line? Imagine what would happen in our family systems if we did that. And we've got tons of opportunities around us. Do you know there are people around us that have rejected the Christian faith because they've seen Christians operate with arrogance, judgmental attitudes, condemning, always pointing out where others are wrong and never really willing to look at their own life? And when you and I, if we choose to be humble and open, allowing someone to tell us things maybe that are uncomfortable to us, it might open the door for something much deeper to happen too. Some of our families, for generations, they've been fractured because they're areas you just don't go to. It's one of the reasons that racism has had such deep, deep roots is no one's willing to call someone out. We're not willing to be called out. I tell a story on myself. Partly I come out looking okay, partly not. Both of our kids have gotten married in the last year. And Becky and I, for years, have given our kids, Sarah and Joseph, permission to speak to us. If there's something you see that you, I mean, if you see us doing something well, cheer us on. But if you see something where you don't think we're doing it right, you have permission without any negative repercussions to come talk to us. So Joseph got married last fall, Sarah just a few weeks ago. And I went to each of their, I went to their mates and I said, here's the deal. This is what we've asked our kids to do. I'm inviting you. If you see me out of line or you're concerned that I might be, I want you to be able to come talk to me without repercussions. Now, I'll be honest. When I said that, I'm thinking, I'm going to get credit for being a really good guy. They'll never point anything out. And I was wrong. I was actually uncomfortably wrong. So a few weeks ago, I get a call from my son and his wife, and said, wanted to mention something to you. And it was said in a way that I was pretty sure it wasn't going to be a positive mention. And what they said was, the other day we were at the house. They have breakfast with us every Saturday. They said, we were at the house, and there was a way you said something to Mom that made us both very uncomfortable. And I was thinking, well, let me clear that up really quick. I don't screw up. It was in my thought bubble. I didn't say it. I'm cooler than that. And then it went on to give me some more details just to paint a full picture. And so I'm listening and I'm thinking, well, man, this is not good. I'm going to have to show them where they're wrong. So I said, well, I'll talk to Mom about that. So we hung up and I asked Becky, and she was not on my side. She said, you know, I remember when that happened and it did sting. I just didn't say anything. Partly probably because, and I'm not sure for this, I'd have to ask her, which I haven't had the guts to do yet, might be because I'm a serial offender. Maybe I've done it a bunch of times and she thinks they just fall on deaf ears. But these two people that see me, they know me, they love me, I know that, were willing to point something out. They were speaking the truth in love to me. Now I got a choice to do with it. Am I going to listen or am I going to defend? Am I going to play the fragile card? I'm not very comfortable with that one. I'm more in the fury category. But who loses when I do that? Everyone. We've got opportunity in front of us to grow and to develop. I had a friend one time said, the problem when you get older is you have a thing called hardening of the categories. You get stuck in your ways. You don't want to change. And you set up an environment where you don't have to. And the shame of that is, that's not what God called you and me to. He wants us to become more and more like His Son in all different kind of ways. And we do that when we are in relationships with others where you can speak the truth in love and where you can have real harmony, where you can have real peace because it's not fake, it's not pretend, it's not tiptoeing around. And the thing is when you and I are willing to speak the truth in love and invite others to do it with us, the benefit of this is it will give us peace with God. We really will experience that sense of security and harmony and things are right with me and my Father. And it gives us the capacity to be able to pursue peace with others in a way that's real and legitimate and could really be life-changing. Ephesians 4:15 says, instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of His body, the church. I think if you and I will adopt this, if we'll take this kind of mindset on, I'm not going to have this fake it kind of thing. I'm not going to play into that dynamic of fake faux peace. But I want to be someone that God can speak to. God can disrupt my life when I'm out of line. I'll allow others to do it too, because I want to be right with Him, and I want to present something to others that is real and genuine and really shows there's a capacity where we can really have true community. We really can love each other. We can really learn to respect and appreciate, and we can grow together. Now that's a legacy worth leaving. Let's pray together. God, there are so many ways that you want to get our attention, and there are so many ways we can deflect. Some of us are in work or family environments where the faking it and just kind of getting along, we've gotten used to it. In fact, it's become normal for us. But it's been at the expense of things that are real and true, just like Jeffrey Wigand, had he not spoken up. Lives are at stake. But God, I pray that you would help us to have the courage and a willingness to follow you wherever you lead. And if that means being a disruptor, if it means breaking this kind of fake semblance of peace and creating division for a while, then help us to be willing to. But help us to be willing to do it first in our own lives. To not set up some kind of system where we're just always protected and where we don't really have to look at reality. Help us to have those coals of shame on our own heads so that we can be used by you to impact the world around us in a way that is real and good and positive, and that we would be a part of helping others see the truth of what Jesus came to do and what he offers. And this Christmas, that you would be honored and that we would be at peace with you while we pursue it in every way that is possible for us to with others. We ask this in Christ's name and for his sake. Amen.